Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
And here is what's happening Tuesday, May 14th, 2019. It's the 85th episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
85.
Brady Wright, Mr. Shane Osborne is again taking a small break, and Steve, the producer, Johan, ready to bring you the best automotive podcast in the known world. And before we jump in, I do want to let everybody know that Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust has a very choice, a very, very specific opening for segment sponsors. It's a great opportunity to reach a close, targeted audience of car enthusiasts every time the show is accessed. We have over a million shares every week.
Yep.
That is very cool. So if your business wants to talk to people who like cars, whether you're on iHeartRadio or Spotify or iTunes or Facebook, let us do the work for you. Just imagine a million listeners hearing me say stuff like, hey, it's time for Black to the Blacktop, and Steve, this week, has amazing technical stuff like this right here.
Oh, well, it's not easy task to operate an automotive manufacturing company.
No.
As the following story illustrates, Nissan Motor Company operating profits dropped 57% this.
That's not a board meeting you want to go to.
No. This is in part to a variety of problems, including a costly plan to improve quality of sales in the U.S., the costs related to the implementation of a warranty extension effort for selected vehicles, and global unit sales fell by 4.4% or down to 5 million, a little over 5 million and a half.
That's a huge.
Yeah.
I mean, they're jumping off bridges out there.
Well, and it's not to mention that they did have their ouster of CEO that was involved with some illegal hanky-panky.
I think it was Bob Ouster, wasn't it?
Yeah, Bob Ouster. Yeah. I think I've heard of that guy's name before.
He's not with us anymore.
No, he's not. And so, you know, you think about that. That is just, I've kind of, as we've been doing the show for over a year and a half now, and I've often thought, taking on the idea of building a company and rolling out not just one, but two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten different models of different cars and platforms and stuff, and doing a worldwide distribution is no easy task.
Well, no, and it's not a small company. They've got a bunch of different sizes.
Oh, they do.
Manufacturing and heavy equipment and electronics and all kinds of things. And to have one of their, just have one of their brands fail by 50%, that's huge.
That's huge.
That's huge.
And then keeping with failure, Uber.
let's talk more about failure.
Uber. As you all know, went public this last week. But this is in the midst of all the drivers, a lot of them up in arms and striking.
Yeah, drivers, Uber
because,
and Lyft, both of them.
Yeah, because the fact is, my son is an Uber driver, and I do know this, that the profits for the drivers are down. They went from 20 to 30% now of their fee.
Right.
Goes back to Uber. And a number of other things are restricting them and blah, 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 blah. And it costs them money as the drivers.
Sure.
Well, they went public. Initial share offering was 45. It dropped down to 37 at the end of the day. and it could keep going down.
That's just not good.
Well, and here's the thing. You build up a company. You sell all these shares. And the owners and the investors, they just want to sell off their stocks and make a bunch of money.
The idea is to make money, not lose money.
But a lot of these guys, they run to an IPO as fast as possible so they can rake in billions of dollars and then, okay, we'll sell the company. We made our money.
Yeah. Does the name Solyndra mean anything to you?
Yes. Yeah. Well, will this happen to a city near you is the following title. The city of Amsterdam is preparing to ban all diesel and gas-powered cars and motorbikes by 2030. In an effort to curb air pollution in the picturesque Dutch city, according to reports from the Netherlands. Pollution often is a silent killer and is one of the greatest health hazards in Amsterdam. And Amsterdam traffic councillor Sharon Dickmas said. And, you know, I've not been to Amsterdam, but I know that back in the 70s and 60s, L.A. was just putrid. It was awful. It looked like an ongoing fog. And then that's when CARB started up and California emissions, all that. And you know what? When I go down to L.A. or Southern California, it's beautiful. I don't see a lot of pollution.
A lot of that
has to
do with...
So these things do work.
Well, yeah, but a lot of it also has to do with the...
No leaded gas.
Yeah, but it has to do with the geographical layout of the city, too. I mean, L.A. is in a basin.
That's right.
And the air has a tendency to stagnate there. Amsterdam is completely different. It's darn near flat. And, you know, there's a lot of pollution sources in Amsterdam and Holland in general outside of carbon monoxide. And I applaud them for trying to clean things up. I think that's great. But it may not necessarily be the solution they're trying to do just to eliminate, you know.
Diesel is huge over in Europe. Compared to here, we have diesel, but not gas to diesel ratio is huge over here. Over there, it's opposite. And that diesel puts out a lot of black crud in the air. Ferrari will be revealing its new hybrid this month. Did you know they're coming out with a hybrid?
Sure, why wouldn't they?
One of five new models.
Ruin a perfectly good mark by making a hybrid. A Ferrari hybrid. Somebody should wash your mouth out with something. That's terrible.
Well, we do know that Tesla's one of the fastest cars out there.
Yeah, but they're not Ferrari. I mean, Ferrari's old school. They're supposed to be swoopy and fast and cool and heavily polluting. And that's what Ferrari's supposed to be. They're not supposed to be hybrids.
Well, they think they are, and they're coming out with some electrified...
Ferrari Volt. Stop. I kind of want to hear that at all.
I don't know. I'm not against it, but...
there's no way to fight against it. They're going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, they've always spent the money on
R&D. Okay, you don't get that revving sound of a Ferrari.
You
don't.
No.
Could you imagine Magnum PI showing up with an electric... In a Tesla? No, I can't.
Yeah,
I can't picture that.
A whole different show. That's a one-season show right there.
Right.
Yeah. Not so good.
Volkswagen is accepting pre-orders for its new ID.3 battery electric hatchback. The automaker claims it has more than 10,000 pre-orders for the new EV.
Probably do.
It does.
But that's a price point, you know, where you can actually get to it.
And, yeah, they say it's coming out at about $33,000 European market.
That's right in there. So, half of a Tesla.
Yeah, even their low-line Teslas. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you know, 10,000 pre-orders, that's really good. And they'll come up with that. And then another sales report, Subaru Corporation saw its net income slide 33% for a fiscal year. So we've talked about that the overall market is cooling. And a few automakers are actually doing well, but a lot of them are just kind of feeling the pinch.
But you know what is selling? This should not be a mystery. What's selling is SUVs, and what's selling is muscle cars.
Well, the muscle cars, per their classifications, are doing well.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah.
So what market research guy doesn't look at that and go, well, this is a good idea. Let's make more electric cars. You do realize what's selling.
But they're looking at the long haul here.
I know.
They're
looking
at the long haul, and they're thinking, you know, peak oil's been hit. They're not going to find any more oil. Therefore, we need to go to battery. Never mind, where are we going to get the electricity? Because more nuke plants are being built.
I mentioned Solyndra earlier.
God, I just wonder. You really do. Daimler AG will cut the development costs of new Mercedes-Benz cars by a significant amount by 2025 and intensify its alliances with rivals as a way to improve margins because they're trying to restructure for electric cars. And they cost a lot more money to make than the combustion engine style car.
That's the thing that grabs me.
They are doing a lot more dancing, making alliances
so
that they
can pay.
They are
pimping real hard for electric cars, and they're more expensive.
A lot
more. And
there's
fewer places you can charge them up.
And what do you do with the batteries when they're dead? What do you do with the engines when they're dead?
Well, you can use them for campfires. Those lithium-ion batteries, they catch on fire real good.
It's a craze. It will be interesting to see in 25 years where we really are. You know, you watch Back to the Future, you watch all the science fiction, you thought we're going to have flying cars. We're never going to have flying cars, folks.
There are flying cars. They just won't.
It's not going to take off.
Yeah.
No.
Well,
idea that we're going to get away totally from, I just don't see it.
Well, given the overall.
Bullet trains are great. I don't have a problem with that, but that's a specific purpose.
That's point to point.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we're glad you're with us. Coming up, we're going to get the break, the news of a brand new, first ever car show that's starting out with a huge bang. And, of course, we'll have more cool stuff about cars on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Hey, Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust is back. This is the Windshield View. Could be sponsored by you. Just give us a call. This week, our guest in the studio is Michael McMorrow. He's the director of creative and programming and the executive producer of Seafair Weekend Television. If you are a Pacific Northwesterner, you know exactly what this is. If you're not, stick with us. We're gonna give you all the details. Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, Michael.
Thank you.
Hey,
great to be here. What a lovely studio you guys have here too. I had to step over a few engine blocks. And,
well, you know, we like the term palatial, and okay. You know, the custom made leather Recaro chairs that you're in, you know, they were donated by one of our sponsors. And
really nice.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
I'm about ready for like a pedicure.
58 Edsel bumper on the wall.
Well, you know,
nice,
speaking
you know,
of which, my office, yeah. my studio / office is in a building with a lot of offices. And
there
down
is,
the hall, there is a pedicure.
A pedicure place. Okay,
there's a couple massage therapists. I mean, you could walk out of here feeling really good.
We could have
the time
Vanessa
you leave.
Come down and give you a pedicure while you're here. That's no problem.
Yeah.
So I want a mojito too.
Even some fake eyelashes can be put on there.
Yeah, you get your eyelashes threaded and everything.
My whiskey neat, you know.
I said fine. Okay.
With the pedicure.
So Seafair in Seattle, Seafair is the home, the absolute home of unlimited hydroplane racing for 70 years. This has been the absolute mecca for anything that has to do with big motors in boats. And over that time, I mean, I'm going to ask you some things about Seafair, but this has been a huge festival for anybody in the Pacific Northwest, and people come from all over the country to come to the races here. The Gold Cup, of course, one of the biggest unlimited races in the country, had its home here, and then they moved it to Idaho, and then it came back, and then back and forth.
Right.
But this is the 70th year.
This is the 70th year of Seafair,
right?
And then next year we're going to be celebrating the 70th year of hydroplaning. So we get to celebrate 270 years.
That's
which is
very cool,
amazing.
But the first time, for the very first time after 70 years, something pretty exciting is coming up. And give us a clue. This is the official rollout announcement.
Well, this is it. Yeah, you guys are hearing it first. So obviously, at Seafair, if you're from the Northwest, you know that we have high-powered, unlimited hydroplanes on the water that they do about 200 miles an hour and 7,000-pound sleds of craziness.
And when they flip, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, and what the amount of the boat that is actually on the water when they're doing that is about a foot. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's why they're called planes.
Amazing
hydroplanes, because they're like planing across.
Yeah, they really are.
And they throw about 300 feet of water.
Oh, yeah.
As you guys know, the rooster tail.
Absolutely.
You know, they call it. So, you know, painting that picture. So what we decided to do this year, and you know, those boats are pretty. They've got great, you know, paint jobs on them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the sponsors.
And a noise like nothing else on the planet.
Noise. Yeah. Or we jet engines, you know, that,
sure.
that power them, you know, power the prop.
Yeah.
And just massive horsepower. So we thought, well, why don't we combine that with a brand new car show that happens?
Oh, yeah.
And not only a car show on the event site itself on Lake Washington, but right on the lake shore.
Absolutely.
Where you are actually watching the hydroplane racing. So the cars will be staged right there.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And not only right on the lake shore, the home stretch where the start finish line is.
Wow.
So cool. Right. So it's, and so the location of the car show itself is,
it's like being
phenomenal.
Being right along the third
baseline.
You're at
ground zero. You're literally at ground zero of the biggest testosterone festival all summer long.
Absolutely.
In Seattle.
And where the start is, where the start finish. Yeah. And if for those who are familiar with hydroplane racing or not, the idea is that 5 minutes before the actual start time, the boats go out on the water. They jockey for position.
Right.
They can't go any slower than 80 miles an hour. And then
that's the slowest.
That's the
just
slowest.
To get,
or they
just
get,
to get this straight.
They get penalized if they do while they're jockeying for their lanes. And then they come around and around and around. And that 5 minute clock counts down to zero, and they hit that start line at about 160.
Yep. Oh yeah!
And so they time it just right. It's just an incredible.
Is that just
feat.
Off Seward Park there?
It's a little north of Seward.
Little
Park.
Little north, yeah.
So we're at Stan Sayers Genesee Park.
Okay.
Stan Sayers
Pits. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So if you look, if you're from out of the general area and you haven't been here, if you get a map of Lake Washington in Seattle, you'll see this big long lake that's essentially the length of the city. It's about 27 miles. And in the south, across the waistband of the lake, there are two floating bridges. And the south of the two is the I-90 floating bridge. And just south of that, I mean, practically within, well, I don't know about rock throwing distance. Maybe Buhner could throw a rock that far, but
maybe
pretty much.
Pretty close.
That's where the racetrack starts. It's on the west side of the lake, right near the shoreline. There's a huge, I mean, how long is the track? I mean, just the course. Is it almost a mile?
Almost. So, yeah, it's almost a mile. So it's about a 3 mile race each time. And then we do then five for the, you know, for the final.
So then on the lake shore, on the west side of the shoreline, starting at the bottom of the course and running darn near up to the top, this is where this car show is going to take place, literally right next to the pits. Am I correct?
Right. Yeah, right. So it starts right next to the pits. It heads north from the pits to pass start finish to the north turn in a location we call Thunder Alley. And I think that the cars are going to be perfect there in Thunder Alley. And this is actually that part of the course, too, is really where the hardcore hydroplane bands sit. You know?
Right.
There's a lot of other stuff happening during hydroplaning, you know, the festival. There's, you know, food and beverage. There's the South Beach, which is like wakeboarding and more, you know, that sort of thing. World pro BMX biking and things like that.
Yeah.
But the north section is the hardcore hydro fans. They're the ones that are there to see the boats. They've been families.
The race is done on the turns, too.
The straight line is fun. Right.
But, man, the jockeying and the turns and that north turn is
that north turn is hairy. So that south turn is where the race is pretty much decided when they hit that start. And that south turn is where the lanes are.
Yeah.
That north turn is choppy. That's where the flips happen.
Yeah.
Coming around that thing. Because you got the water banging up against the bridge
And you got the bridge. So you got to make the turn.
Well, turn is
that too.
The bridge is far enough away. But
I know,
I don't think anybody's ever actually run into the bridge, but they've gone off course.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah, they've gone off course.
Spectacularly.
There's been some phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't want that. That's not why you go there, but it does happen occasionally.
Well, everybody.
We had a flip last year during the final. So we started, they got through the first lap. They got up to the north turn, and the Alberto got behind a rooster tail, rode up on it, did a complete 360, and landed on its hull.
Man.
Yeah.
And the driver got out fine and
you
know. But now and that's a little safer now. So years ago, like, you know, up until the 70s, there was no cockpit covers or
seatbelts.
Plus they were driving, I mean, they were using Merlins and Rolls-Royce engines, you know, from the fighter planes in World War II, and it was a whole different kind of racing, really guts, you know. They used to say it's all guts and gonads.
Old slow mo days.
Let me tell you just a little tidbit too that maybe you guys didn't know about motorsports in general and how hydroplaning has affected it. So There was a boat in the 60s, and you guys probably may have known this or seen this product, Miss Bardal.
Absolutely.
Which is, you know, the
Ole
oil.
Bardal.
Yep, the oil additive. So probably back in maybe early 60s, late 50s, somewhere around there. I might be, you know, off a few years here. He was going to put an advertisement on his boat and then write it off as a business expense for the taxes to the IRS.
Because that's smart.
And the IRS wouldn't let him. They said, no, you can't do it. It's not a business expense. He sued the IRS and he won.
And won.
And you know, that was the very first advertisement on any sort of motorsport in history. That started the landslide of like sponsoring NASCAR cars and everything like that, right? Here from Ballard, Washington.
Ole Bardal.
That's
right. Wow. Yeah. You know, you don't think about that, but it takes one individual thinking outside the box, and then he then he fought it all the way, and he won it. I mean, that's wonderful.
It's a huge.
And it changed the course of racing in general, because now all of a sudden the racers that were ragtagging along, shoehorning themselves along, bootstrapping along, now all of a sudden they can go out and get a little bit of funding from some sponsors. So you had the famous Miss Budweiser, which was the one of the most winning
Bernie
boats in the history. And then, of course, you had Chip Hanauer, one of the biggest names in racing. So
Chip will be there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have him out riding one of those vintage boats.
That's cool. Well, we're going to talk about Chip and some of the other boats and the car show, too, as we come back for the second half here. But this is good. I also want to find out how you got involved in Seafair back in the day.
You bet.
So don't go anywhere. Stay right here. We got Michael and another story from the old Car Nut books. All of that and more coming up on our extremely exciting version of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old-school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust after these messages.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, "Good evening, officer." And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend.
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Back in Vehicle City. Well, we're coming back with you for the second half of the Windshield View, sponsored by, well, whoever we might get in there. And we're talking to Michael McMorrow with the Seafair Classic. Seafair.
Seafair. You can see a long way.
Seafair. Seafair. Not to be confused with Seafair Jeans. Seafair Classic Car Show. Remember Seafair Jeans?
Nope.
No.
Back in the 70s. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Sold in Bellingham. Probably not Seattle.
Okay.
And just before the break, we were talking about Bardal, and we were talking about how advertising started changing the face of racing. It allowed racers to have a chance to bring in some extra money and help them while they were on the road, because they don't just race here. They actually do a circuit in those things. And
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with the whole idea of CFAR and CFAR racing.
Yeah, how long have you been involved?
I was kidnapped by a pirate.
I knew that
guy. And people who don't know, there are CFAR pirates all over the place.
There sure are.
I'll tell you how far back I go. Gary Vance was Captain Kidd at one point. You know Gary.
Yeah.
Okay. So that dates me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the festival's pretty, we've been around a few years.
Yeah.
CFAR. I'm a Northwest kid. I grew up here. Loved CFAR. I mean, CFAR Sunday was like the Super Bowl at my house, you know. And we'd watch it on television, and it would be an all day affair. And as I got older, you know, we would go down and see CFAR and the races in Kennewick and travel, and you know, ended up taking my kids there quite a few years ago too, just to sort of do that. But my background really is in event and music and event production and producing and broadcast. And I had a career in broadcasting up until the point where I got to CFAR. Was just kind of tired of it, you know, and just the place I was at just wasn't very happy, and thought, you know, I want to do something, you know, fun and not out of broadcasting. And this opportunity came up to join CFAR to produce events for them. So really for the last couple of years, I've been producing the Torchlight Parade, which is huge.
Yes.
One of the biggest parades on the West Coast. The 4th of July fireworks for the city of Seattle.
Always huge.
Lake Union Gas Works, that's mine. I produce that as well, too. And then program a lot of the events and the content. So really right now I'm CFAR's creative director. So all these skill sets that I've been, you know, collecting over the years kind of rolled into one. And next thing you know, I'm, top of the pit tower during the final screaming my brains out.
So it's you're paying me to do this? This is cool.
Absolute, like, if you were to ask me 10 years ago, you know, McMorrow, you'd be producing the 4th of July and the Torchlight Parade.
No.
Television programming for the Hydros and stuff. I told you, you're, what are you smoking?
Yeah.
You know, you're absolutely
this is a full-time job in a year-round because the amount of effort and the amount of manpower and the amount of planning to pull this off. This is a citywide, regional-wide event. This is not just a small little, we got a carnival coming into town type thing. This is like a full-on.
Yeah, we start building the event site almost 3 to 4 weeks out, you know.
Yep.
Start building the race course out there, you know, and dropping the buoys and the, you know, points for anchoring and, you know, start bringing in the scaffolding and the fencing a couple weeks out. We build a little city. The venue itself is about 4 miles long. And, all that has to be secured. And
is that all on public land there?
Yeah, it is.
It's city.
It's city property.
Yeah, it's amazing how long that park is, that area there.
Yeah, well, we take up a lot of the streets, so Lake Washington Boulevard, North and South.
And that's what I mean. The whole city gets behind this. So it's like, we're shutting down this area for the length of the time.
Too. And then also, you know, with the boats, too, we also have the air show, which features
the
Blue Angels.
Blue Angels, very cool.
Stunt plane. So really, it's a full day of just exciting fun and, motorsport with the Hydros and now the car show.
So I got to ask, with all of that going on, that's a heck of a lot of content and a lot of, you know, moving parts. Where did car show come up? How does that suddenly decide to fit in?
You know,
it's a great idea.
It is something I've been thinking about for the past couple years and actually sort of had the ability to do it. It was, you know, what sort of people do you want to bring out to your event? And of course, CFAR and the Hydros, it's a motorsport. It's a sport, you know, and it's and I thought, you know, that demographic might like cars and
motor guys, boats,
you know, and they're pretty loud, you know, fast things that are there, cool. And
the vroom people are everywhere.
Well, and then put them in the park, but let's put them in the park with the hardcore Hydro fans.
Absolutely.
Sit them on the lake shore, you know, and it just seemed like great synergy, a great thing to do. The CFAR board went with it immediately.
Nice.
And it just seemed hands down. They were like, wow, I'm surprised we didn't think of this before.
Well, plus, we discovered something in the process of putting this thing together. I say we because Michael's kind enough to let me chair the event. But there's lots and lots of car shows throughout the Pacific Northwest every weekend, all summer long.
Yep.
They're everywhere. During CFAR weekend, August 2nd, 3rd, 4th,
yep.
There's not really anything. And the reason is because nobody wants a car show to compete with the hydro races. Everybody's going to go to the hydro races. So if you put a car show at the races.
What a prime opportunity.
It's
just begging to happen.
It literally sells
itself. And the fact that these guys, now, it's $25 entry to come in there.
Yep.
Well, yeah, let's back up.
And that allows them to park right there on the shore, and they can watch the hydroplane races.
Well, yeah, let's do the show from top to bottom.
Okay.
I mean, how does this thing actually work?
So the show is going to be on Saturday, August 3rd, right. So one day only that we're going to do it. We'll roll cars in early, and then when the thing's over, we'll roll them out. But it's the inaugural car show, so right. If you want to participate, the easiest thing to do is just to go to seafair.com/car show.
Car show, yeah.
Boom. You can get all the information to register there. It's a vintage car show, 89 and older.
So we're doing 30 years old or older.
My son's Crown Vic.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Wow, nice. Yeah. How long is it?
Yeah, that's right.
Is it trailered?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you see, I'm learning.
It still drives.
You know, Brady's really, really.
As long as it's under 20 feet, we're okay.
Yeah.
Cars and trucks this time around. $25. You know, registration fee, there'll be awards, it'll be a regular show. We'll have judging. You roll in the morning, we'll park you in the morning, you got all day to spend watching the races and
it's secure parking.
And it's secure parking, it's a secure venue, it's a closed venue, it's a ticketed venue,
right.
So...
But that's that gets what I was going to ask you about. How do the fans? So it's part of, if I come down as a fan, I pay. What's it cost to get into the whole thing then, to watch the cars, to watch the boats?
I'm going to say it's between 40 and 55, depending on the type of ticket that you get,
because there's several different kinds of tickets.
Yeah.
I mean, you get the captain's club. You can just be a regular on the venue,
right.
On the footprint. You can go into the beer gardens or not.
Right.
Whether or not you're going to go to...
I gotcha.
So there's different kind of levels. If you get a three-day pass, you know, there's a little break,
right.
But it's more money. So, you know...
Absolutely.
It depends on...
So the
on
guys within the cars, they're just going in for the...
The guy pays $25 to get his
you
car.
You can't beat that, right? Folks, you can't beat that.
And you can bring your own car in, so you don't have to worry about parking.
Yeah,
you
you're
know?
Parked in the best spot on the lake.
Okay, that's a sale. That's a sale.
Why would you not do this?
Can we just trailer your rig down there and park it?
Nah.
we're being pretty selective, though. So when you do register, you want to make sure that you're just not schlepping
your
stuffing your family in the back seat with blankets.
You mean drive-in theater
like the drive-in
stuff?
Thing. Yeah. I used to do that, you know? Yeah, remember 18, Cheech and Chong?
18
you know,
guys
the,
in the trunk.
The trunk.
Dave, hey, let me out. What's that going on? It's leaking.
The other thing, too, is you do have to pre-register this year.
Yes.
There's not going to be any day of show registration, so you got to pre-register, which means back to seafair.com/car show.
The reason for that is because there's a little bit going on down there, too.
Well,
so,
plus,
you know.
There is a limit to space.
Yeah, there
is,
too.
We have a mile and a tenth or so of lakefront to park cars on, but that's a finite number. So, you know, we think, depending on, you know, the number of cars and the angles and stuff like that, we may be able to get 350 cars, but we don't know. We went down and Michael and I have worn out shoes. We've walked the thing enough. Actually, we drove his car, but
pavement or on grass?
It's on pavement.
Yeah.
Wow.
The little grass strip.
You're backing up onto some grass in some places.
That's okay.
But yeah. But, you know, the whole footprint of the car show itself, there's, you know, porta potties, there's beer gardens, there's coffee places, there's you're in the middle of the mix.
Right.
There's really no bad spot at all. And people will be able to see your car, of course, which is, you know, the important thing to the car guys, but you'll be able to see everybody else's car and the races. And you're going to be able to hear the PA almost everywhere.
Yep. Right.
So, and then, of course, we got awards. There's going to be trophies at 4 o'clock, did we say?
4:30. Still working on the schedule right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it is definitely a trophied and awarded show. The prize list is the category list will be on the website. Michael's holding it in his hot little hand even as we speak. And what else? What else is exciting about the show?
Well, just really amazing lakeshore hydro viewing, I'll have to say, and air show as well, too. I mean, you just can't pick a better spot, especially if you're into motorsport, you're into racing, you're into the actual excitement of it, not just, there's like the casual fans that come at the festival and they do things and they watch it, and then there's ones that really like to watch the race, and really that's what we're there for.
Oh, yeah.
And, you get to see that start, you get the north turn, it's a... just a really great spot to be.
Plus, you got the advantage of being there first year ever.
First year ever.
Commemorative dash plaques
right.
for everybody who registers. Yep. You got, I mean, there's a goodie bag for everybody. That's going to be pretty cool.
But that's not all. You get a trophy, too.
Well, there's a trophy, sure. I mean,
yeah,
no,
if you win.
No participation
win.
Trophies. You know, you got to win something. But
right.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a judged show. Highly qualified judges. Oh, we didn't even talk about the Torchlight Parade.
Oh.
That's right.
Yeah, the Torchlight Parade.
So the week before the event is the Torchlight Parade in downtown Seattle, one
right.
of the hugest parade events all summer long.
Yes.
And some cars representing the show are going to be in that parade. So
so
everybody along the parade route will now see firsthand what this
How
event
does
is
that happen?
Be.
Do they get judged by who gets chosen to be in the car in the parade?
We've carefully and very diligently selected some entries that will be perfect for promoting the show.
Okay.
Yeah, so just representative of the different sort of diverse
very good.
Sort of
yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, diversity of cars that are there.
Now, when does that parade run? Because it's in the evening. It's a Friday night, correct?
It's Saturday night.
Saturday
so
night.
Saturday, July 27th this
right.
year. The parade starts at the Seattle Center, goes down 4th Avenue down to the stadiums,
right.
2.5 miles.
And what time does that
television,
start?
7:30 p.m.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah, so it's a nighttime parade. So by the time it hits dusk, you know, the later parade entries, lots of lights. And
yep.
you know, we have
yeah.
like a big, you know, huge yeah. hydro section. So a lot of the hydros, either the boats that aren't racing in Tri-Cities that weekend, they're extra
right.
boats, so they have model boats that are, you know, and trucks and crews go down as well, too, plus all the seafare fun, pirates, clowns.
You know,
we're
going
to arrange to have the pirates right. behind the customs.
Yeah, they're
just, yeah,
all night long,
thing.
boom, with yeah. the cannon. So,
yeah.
yeah. So if we want to punish an entry
yeah.
that may have misbehaved in the parade before,
yes.
there you
we
go.
Put them in front of the
in
pirates.
In front of the pirates.
Right,
that's
so 2.5 miles cannon fire.
Pirate X all
Can
over
I
the back
say that
of
out
deck.
Loud?
Well, maybe.
Well, and for those who don't know pirate, these people are actually part of a pirate association, and they dress up as pirates all the time, and act
Every
out
day.
The part and
at their jobs.
They're pretty
yeah.
crazy people.
Some of them think they are real pirates.
Yes, they do.
But they do a lot of great community work too.
Yes,
so
they
Seafair
do.
Pirates have been around almost as long as Seafair have, and
yeah,
they're in
really?
Children's Hospital and
yep.
and
yep.
you know, raising money and clothing
yeah.
and food drives and backpack. And
well, I want to back up for a moment. It says here in the fact sheet that it takes nearly 2,000 volunteers to pull this off. Talk about that.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, so Seafair Weekend. So Seafair, the staff that I'm on, we're like a pretty lean staff of 12. So, you know, putting an event together that draws about 160,000 to 180,000 people,
yeah. right.
you know, is quite the feat on that, you know, on that big footprint. So we employ a ton of volunteers. And a lot of these people, like, they take their vacations to do this. A lot of them are boaters.
Yeah.
A lot of them come down and they're help setting the course. They, you know, they run the cranes. They run the pits. And a lot of these volunteers, there's, like, families that come down and their family, you know, and their kids, like, grew up with Seafarer now. You know, running things. So we have, you know, ground operations, we have water ops, we have, you know, air show operations,
yeah.
and each one of them, you know, has a head volunteer and a slew of volunteers under that run, you know.
That's just amazing.
Go get your golf cart for the day, you know, you get it from a volunteer. You get
yeah.
your pit
right.
pass, you get it from a volunteer. You
And, of course, you got plenty of medic people and people that are,
yep.
You know, out there in case somebody passes out from the heat exposure
oh, yeah.
or whatever like
Absolutely.
That, which always happens. You know,
Seafair has a great emergency management group
yep.
that it consists of a ton of volunteers of, you know, firefighters and police officers and EMT.
Yep.
And doctors and nurses and stuff that we deploy.
Having been to that event, I mean, many, many times over the years as a native, I've always been impressed with how well run and sort of seamless the support people are compared to, I mean, it's just wall-to-wall people down there, and yet it works really, really well. It's just extremely well done.
No, we've been doing it a long time.
Yeah,
so
kind of got it figured out.
Kind of got it figured out, yeah. Although this year is going to be phenomenal with the car show and some other things that we're actually bringing too. So the idea this year is to really bolster the hydro races, really bring the
yep.
fans closer to the action. We're bringing a bigger PA system in. We've got huge LED video walls with audio support. We're really going to just crank it up down there, plus
Super.
The car show.
Plus the car show. Well, look,
yeah.
you can find out more about the car show by going to seafair.com/car show. We will put those links up along with the show page. We will also promote the Seafair, the hydroplane race itself along the show page. This is going to go to the Seafair site, so we're going to cross-promote all over the place. Michael McMorrow, thank you for coming down and talking with us about
pleasure.
The show.
Yeah.
Super duper.
Yeah, this has been great. We
yeah.
just really
we're really
appreciate
looking
you,
forward to it.
And I'm going to have fun talking to you after the show because you've been involved in this industry and I just find it's really cool that we're a part of it. And I just want to say thanks again, Michael, for being in here. Go to seafair.com/car show and find out more about it. Hey, we'll be right back with more of the show, a really cool story, and the trivia is coming up as well. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Boy, are we trivial.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest-growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motorwork, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air-Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org.
Welcome back to Cars Confidential. And where we sometimes call it story time.
Yes,
and
we do,
Brady,
sometimes.
What kind of story do we have this week?
Well, boys and girls, this weekend from the old Carnot book number 3, we have a story by Jim Hinckley called A Life on the Road. And, you know, it's kind of typical of people who are car people.
Life on the road, not
like
not a roadie
out.
Or a
no,
or
no, no, no.
Like
no,
a
no.
musician
this
or something.
Is, this is actually driving. So to say that I have an intimate knowledge of the highways and backroads of America would be akin to saying that Phoenix is a bit warm in midsummer. Road trips and epic transcontinental journeys in vehicles best described as junkyard refugees have been an integral part of my life almost since birth, and my family often used to tease me that pivotal moments of childhood development occurred along the highway. I was born in the year of the Edsel. Quick, what year is that?
I don't know, 32?
No, 58. Come on.
Oh.
Edsel. And within spitting distance of the Atlantic Ocean, the following
Shane
year...
Shane would have had that one.
He would have known. The following year, we moved to Norfolk, Virginia, and 2 years after that to Port Huron, Michigan, and in between were road trips to Arizona, much of it on U.S. 66, Utah, and a few other trips with visits to family in Tennessee and North Alabama. We traveled in a battered old Chevy convertible that Dad got cheap because it spent some time underwater after a hurricane. In 1966, after spending every summer driving south on U.S. 127 to visit family in Chattanooga and making side trips for visits in North Alabama and Georgia, we headed west in an epic move to Kingman, Arizona that was reminiscent of the road trip immortalized forever in The Grapes of Wrath.
Yes.
Probably not as much dust. For the odyssey to Arizona, my dad resurrected a well-used and rusted COE truck representing the post-war Advanced Design Series by Chevrolet. The calendar indicated that the epic westward flight of the Okies had occurred several decades prior to our move to Arizona. Still, we camped along the road for most nights, ate beans and fruit cocktail from cans, washed the dust and sweat from our faces in service station restrooms or roadside streams, and watched the countryside drift by at speeds that occasionally were in excess of 40 miles an hour unless Dad was making roadside repairs. For reasons never fully understood, Dad simply loved the life of adventures lived on the cheap. He continued such endeavors well into his late 70s with a trip to Alaska that included used tires, a 20-year-old car, and a pup tent, as well as similar transcontinental voyages of discovery. Now, 5 years after moving to Arizona, we picked up and moved to Silver City. This is in New Mexico. In the period between those two moves, we made annual trips east to see family in Chattanooga, on Sand Mountain in Alabama, and in Jackson, Michigan, where Hinckley Boulevard connects that city with Vandercook Lake, and one trip across Death Valley and up the West Coast. Now, with the exception of Route 66, seldom was a highway traveled twice, as Dad was a very big fan of seeing new country on every trip.
My sons will be able to write a story like this about their life with my wife and I doing
early in
road
life
trips.
I discovered the joy of personal road trip adventures and an abiding love for a highway sign with two sixes. At first, a bicycle provided the transportation for these little grand adventures of discovery. Over a stretch of Route 66, bypassed in 1952, that snaked through Black Mountains of Arizona and west of Kingman. As hauling water became a weekly chore by the time I was in junior high school, four wheels followed by two before I was old enough for a license, behind the wheel of trucks that had rolled from the factory a decade or more before I was born, a passion for exploring the road less traveled began to simmer as dusty, rutted trails were followed across the desert. The next epic move, this time from Silver City to Jackson, Michigan, followed a few years later. Shortly afterwards came the last family move, at least for me. That adventure followed two trips from Michigan to Arizona, each more harrowing and exciting than the last, as they were the first in which I was behind the wheel. Before casting my first vote for president, an addiction to adventures was deeply rooted in my soul. Road trips were now as much of a part of my life as breathing. For a few years before settling down to raise a family, I flirted between Arizona and New Mexico, with occasional forays into Colorado and Mexico, and explored pioneering highways and trails along the way. Even when my dearest friend and I moved from infatuation to something a whole lot more serious, road trips, Route 66, vintage cars, and adventures on the road became an integral part of our relationship. Weekend dates required me to drive from Ash Fork to Kingman on Route 66 in my 46 GMC. We double-dated in a 26 Ford touring car. Drives to Oatman and old Route 66 and a visit to Jan's soda fountain at the Kingman Drug, or a double date to the drive-in theater and a 49 Jimmy, consumed our time together. After marriage, I introduced my bride to more of the thrills of road trip adventures. We traveled to the coast of Oregon, the Colorado Rockies, and into New Mexico. Still, as much as I enjoyed life on the open road and the people met along the way, there was a determination to ensure that my son would not spend his childhood as a gypsy. I was equally determined to instill in him a love for road trip adventures and the fascinating people who gave these exploits flavor and color. Therefore, at least once a year, our family embarked on such a journey, a road trip in search of America, and a road where non-generic cafes and motels still reigned supreme. Some were more epic, others mundane, but none were boring trips to places like Disneyland. Nope. Instead, we followed dusty, rutted tracks into the Serbat Mountains of Arizona in search of ghost towns with visions of lost treasure dancing in our heads. We followed trails to the headwaters of the Gila River, where cliff dwellings loom above the forest and canyon walls made of whim-of-the-moment flights to Virginia to chart the evolution of America from colonial Williamsburg to Monticello, and then from the Battle of Cold Harbor to Richmond in a rental car. We explored Indian reservations and Route 66 territorial highways in the Bradshaw Mountains of Arizona and the Carlsbad Canyons, and sought out classic attractions such as Waldrug, Rock City, and, of course, the world's largest hand-dug well. When I was not taking road trips, I planned road trips and read about historic road trips, and soon came requests to tell tales of road trips along the way. Somewhere, about 25 years ago, with gentle encouragement from my wife, I decided to pursue a childhood goal of becoming a writer and harnessing what folks called a gift for telling people where to go and my passion for vintage vehicles. The pursuit of that goal continues, as does my love for telling folks where to go, likewise with my passion for adventures on the road less traveled. The Great American Road Trip's been an integral part of my life for almost six decades. Fortunately, for more than three decades, those adventures on the road and memories were made with my best girl. If our road trip adventures and recent tours of Route 66 and US 54 are any indication, I'm quite confident that it'll continue to dominate our lives for a few decades more. Now I wonder, how long would it take to drive Route 66 end-to-end in a Model A Ford?
You know, I love it because he's like replaying my life. I did road trips with my folks every 2 or 3 years. We'd go on 2 or 3 week road trips. We'd explore. And then I picked it up as a kid. I did it on my own. My wife and I, we got married. We did it, and we took our kids. My first road trip with my son. My first son, he was, I think, 6 months old, and we went to Iowa from, north of Seattle.
Sure.
And I'll tell you what, I love road trips. The last one, we flew back east and spent two weeks, covered 3,500 miles,
and
saw everything. Everybody goes, you're spending not enough. It's like, no, you don't understand. I may not be here again. We're going to see everything we can, and this is how our family rides.
And I think we're all fortunate to have grown up during a time when you could do that.
Definitely.
I'm not sure that people take road trips as much anymore, and it's kind of too bad. The first one I took when I was 13, my folks decided they were going to drive from Seattle to visit my mother's sister and her husband, who lived in Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Yeah.
Now, you just walk that one past a little bit.
But that was an excuse to go there.
It was huge.
That was, yes.
You know, I mean, four people in a car, in a 63 Chevy Impala two-door, by the way, 3,200 miles. That was...
70 Dodge Polara. We went to Wisconsin with my sister and I, my mom and dad.
Yeah. Hey, I want to thank David Dickinson, who compiles the old Car Nut books. There are 3 books in the series, and he's very kind to let us read some of those stories on the show every week. You can get them on Amazon. You can find them at oldcarnutbook.com, and they do make a terrific gift for any and all. By the way, Father's Day is not too far away, and that would look pretty good underneath the festive Father's Day tree. Wait, there isn't a festive Father's Day.
No, there's not.
But the books would still look good there. David will appreciate me saying that.
Well, and speaking of taking tours and going there, the 25th annual Hot Rod Power Tour is coming up.
That's right.
And they expect about 6,000 vehicles to show up at the big annual spectacular. But it goes from June 8th to 14th. Go to Hot Rod Magazine. That is something started 25 years ago. I used to get Hot Rod back in those days, and I thought, would be so cool to take my El Camino. Well, I haven't yet, so maybe one of these days.
You need to put your El Camino
together. Well, I do.
Just, you know.
We're going to do a Horsepower Chrome and Rust tour. That's what we're going to do.
I like that.
So stick with us. We'll be right back with more of the show. We got a great weekly trivia coming up, and, maybe a little bit more events, too.
We're going to plug next week's show, too.
All right.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can, you're an El Camino, El Camino man.
right. Steve's theme song every week. Welcome to Around the Wheel. This is where we talk about upcoming events, the weekly trivia question. And the weekly trivia question from last week was a classic. It was, because Cadillacs, of course, are classics. The question was, what year did Cadillac introduce as regular production the electric sunroof? And obviously some of these, you could just Google them,
was that,
I suppose.
35?
You think 1935,
no,
the electric sunroof?
No.
I'm sorry.
Like more like 55.
No. It actually was because they were hydraulic.
Oh.
See, the early ones were hydraulic, but the electric was 1969.
Okay.
1969 was the Eldorado, of course. And interestingly enough, we got a winner from up in your neck of the woods when you grew up, Sheila Duro, a lovely listener from Surrey, B.C., British Columbia.
Wow.
Got with me on Facebook and said, you know what? We have Google in Canada, too, eh?
Surrey's a great place.
Yeah, real nice. So she wins the coveted chrome-plated, leather-upholstered bucket of horsepower chrome and rust barn find dust, which we cleverly give away for every one of our trivia winners. And, of course, you know that if you pour barn find dust on your vehicle, it will immediately quadruple in value because people will think you've
found it.
Does
that include vintage hydroplanes?
You know, I imagine if you put barn find dust on an old boat, it'd probably be worth lots more.
Yeah.
People to think it'd been stored away forever. Yeah. And I'm sure, of course, why not?
You don't see any shows about barn finds about old fishing boats and things like
that. Hey, down in South Seattle, there is the Hydroplane Museum that has, I mean, there are some significant cool, and they've got 7 liters and cracker boxes and 225s in there, too. But there's also some good.
Where's that located?
Oh, It's in Kent. It's in Kent proper, but it's not exactly in the center of town. I could drive you to it, but I don't know the name. However, if you look up Hydroplane Museum.
Oh, I will.
You will find it.
I will. I'm going to put that on my things to do
this
year.
It is worth going to. It's kind of unassuming when you go by and you're not exactly sure. But once you get in there, it's like, I mean, they got all kinds of stuff. It's fascinating stuff. Anyway, we do have a trivia question for next week. Oh, he's got a picture of it. There's the pack, the pan pack.
Oh, yes, the pan pack.
Too cool. Yep, they are there.
Great store back in the day.
Oh, magnificent. So this week's trivia question is, this is going to be a good one. What U.S. production car had the largest four-cylinder engine?
Ooh.
If you know, you just get with us on Facebook. You can answer there, or you can send us an email at contactus@horsepowerchromeandrust.com. You too, yes you, could be a winner of the coveted Horsepower Chrome and Rust Barn Find Dust, the official bucket of which is sitting just near Michael here on our shelf. And yeah, it's true.
You know, look at this beautiful-looking car there.
What is
it? It's a Hemmings car of the day. It's a rare station wagon built in 1958. It's an Oldsmobile Super 88 Fiesta four-door
hardtop
station wagon. I'm like going, it looks like literally
they
took
only made
the sedan and
then
they just put the back on the thing. See how it's done? It looks like the regular sedan, and then they just knocked the added the top on it.
Yeah, it's almost like a shooting brake. And you realize
it
there's
is.
A little-known fact about this car. The car weighed 6,000 pounds. 5,000 of that was chrome.
Oh, it's all chrome. It's all chrome. 371 CID V8. This one's got the optional 3x2 carburetors.
Oh, too cool.
Fold-down rear seat, luggage rack, air conditioning, power brakes, power steering, push-button AM.
I love it.
And for under, I think it's like, what, $43,000 or something like that.
That's
so,
not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Beautiful
it's a runner,
car.
Not a trailer.
I've never seen one of those.
Well, there's probably not that many. How many made 5,000 of them?
Yeah, 5,000 of them.
I'm not surprised you haven't seen them. Most of them probably in somebody's garage.
And what's next week? We got a couple seconds left.
Next week, I'm actually going to go over to Manson, Washington, which is just around
Monsters
Chelan.
Of Manson.
Over this weekend for the Monsters in Manson show. I'll be bringing back some interviews with those guys over there. Some of them are doing the Rat Rod Challenge to build a running vehicle for under $4,000. And there's four or five of the guys who are going to build it. We're talking to them. We're talking about the show. So stick with us. That is our cue to hit the gas until next week. Thanks to Michael McMorrow from the Seafair Classic Car Show. Links are going to be posted on our page to that and a bunch of other cool stuff coming up. Check our archives for shows at horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I'm Brady Wright saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Next week, it's the all-cars version of another Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Take care.